parses the look. We know that the Jews are forbidden from fighting against the nations of Ammon and Moab. They weren't allowed to fight them. It's Edom as well. We aren't so sure why. The Pasuk says in Parshas Devarim and Parshas Chukats as well, Al Tatsaras Moab. You're not allowed to fight against Moab, they're told. So they know that already. The easy answer is that it's not their time to be beaten yet. Right? That's the easy answer, that Moab and Ammon were never supposed to be defeated. Not yet, at least. Not until the times of Mashiach. So therefore they're not allowed to fight them. But there has to be more to it than just that. Right? Did those nations realize that Bnei Israel wasn't going to fight them? Did they know that Bnei Israel wasn't going to go anywhere near them? They must have, since the Jews weren't going in their direction at all. They had gone through Sihon and Og, Moab and Ammon, which were to the east of Sihon and Og. Bnei Israel didn't go anywhere near. Everybody knew that Bnei Israel were going toward Eretz Canaan. They had sent spies there 39 years earlier. So it should be somewhat obvious that they're not going to fight Moab and Ammon. So what was Balak so afraid of? Balak stands there in the beginning of the Parsha, king of Moab, and he's afraid, right, that he's going to have to fight them with magic and curses. What did he see that made them so worried? And especially because it starts off by Yar Balak ben Tzippor, as Kol Asher Asa Yisrael Amori. Balak ben Tzippor saw everything that happened in Amori. What did he see? What was he looking at more than anything else? Now, when it says by Yagar Moab Nibnei Am in the second pasuk in pasuk Gimel, Yagar Moab Nibnei Am, that the people were afraid of Ha'am Ma'od very much, Ki Ravu. That reference is to the Erev Rav. The Am always refers to the Ameel Ratzim of Bnei Yisrael. The people were not exactly on the level of Tzadikim. And then it says Ki Ravu. That's the Erev Rav. That's what it's referring to. Right? They say they saw that wherever the Jews went, they were becoming bigger. How were they becoming bigger? Because so many nations wanted to join them. The Erev Rav themselves were 1.2 to 1.6 million men that came with Bnei Yisrael when they left Mitzrayim. Even the people that, when they left Mitzrayim and they had all the makos and everything, even those people wanted to join Bnei Yisrael. So this might be it. This might be what they're afraid of. They're not afraid Bnei Yisrael are going to kill them. That would actually be painless for them. To kill them, that would be even better. But they didn't want to join Bnei Yisrael. They were going to be Megayer and go to Bnei Yisrael after seeing their greatness and see how powerful they were. And what Moab wanted is to not join Klal Yisrael, not be involved with Klal Yisrael. And in the end, I'm just going to point out now, that worked. Balak was successful. None of the Moabites or the Ammonites converted and went to Bnei Yisrael. Now, it's true also that Moab and Ammon, the men, are not allowed to join Klal Yisrael. But the only reason why the men aren't allowed to join Klal Yisrael is because they didn't end up giving them food and drink when they were sitting in the desert right now. So Moab and Ammon had a choice. Either we can go to Bnei Yisrael right now and we can give them food and drink and then we'll be able to join them as Gerim later on. Or we can choose not to join Klal Yisrael. We can choose to do our own thing in our own way and maybe fight them in some magical way or whatever it is. And then from then on, it'll be an official rule, you're not allowed to join Klal Yisrael. That was their choice, and their choice was made. And now that they made that choice, it's too late. The comparison they make is that Vayomer Moab Zikne Midian. Moab said to the elders in Midian, Ato, now, Yelachahu HaKahol is called Svibo Senu. The Kahol, the group of Bnei Yisrael, will lick us up for everything around us. Kilchu HaShor as Yerek HaSodeh. Like an axe licks up the vegetables of the field. That is very cute and very poetic. But what in the world is this doing here? It's completely unnecessary. Just say, Bnei Yisrael are going to kill us. You're saying like, no, they're going to lick us up like an ox. Ooh, that's nice. That's a good comparison. So the idea is that there's a concept that we, this is the concept by everything we do. We are sent out into the wide world to make changes. That's what we're here for. We see the Kedusha out there that's trapped within the realm of Tumah. There's Kedusha that Tumah has taken over and grabbed for itself. It's power being used for the wrong purposes. And our job is to fix that up and bring that Kedusha back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's our job. Take the Kedusha trapped by the Tumah and bring it back to Hashem. What that's called in Hebrew is being male nitzotzos, raising up sparks of Kedusha within everything in the world. And we can do that by either davening, or by learning, making brachos, or by doing mitzvos associated with that object itself. Doing any of those things will work. in the Kedushas Library of Levi Yitzchak Berdichev, he explains, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu cursed Adam HaRishon, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu cursed Adam and said, you would now eat all the grasses of the field. You're now going to eat all the grasses and herbs of the field. Now, it may refer to vegetables and other herbs, right? But don't take it away from the Pashup Shat. The Pashup Shat is that it's Esev Asad, the grass of the field. What human being eats grass? Since when do you eat grass? That doesn't happen. No jokes. But everything you eat is supposed to have a mitzvah involved with it. Everything you eat is supposed to have some type of mitzvah. For example, whenever you plow, right, and the ground, you have a mitzvah. You can't plow with kilayim, with two different types of animals together, like an ox and a donkey. When you're planting, there's differences of kilayim. Again, you're not allowed to plant things together. Reaping, you have to leave leket shechapeh. There's concepts of what you have to leave in the field, and so forth. There's mitzvahs by every single thing that we do when it comes to food. That way, you do the mitzvah dealing with that food. Your maila, the sparks of kedusha that are within that food, and you made a tikkun. You did something right with it. Then later on, you take the food, you make a bracha on it. Even more so, your maila, the kedusha, to the level of where you're at, you brought something up. However, grasses have none of those mitzvahs. Nobody plants grasses specifically. So there's no issue of killing. There's no issue of harvesting them or anything like that. The grasses of the field don't have that type of life. So what would be the tikkun when Adam Rishon eats them? That was the curse. The curse that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Adam Rishon is that there's going to be certain things that have an impossibility for human beings to be mylodonitosis. Grass. There's nothing you can do. Nobody eats grass. You don't plant grass. There's no mitzvahs involved with grass whatsoever. And yet it's throughout the entire world. So what are you going to do with grass? You have an entire thing out there that we have no ability to be mitaken. There's no higher purpose for grass. What are you supposed to do with that? It would be it couldn't have a tikkun. Nothing good will come from it. And that's that. All of that changed by Matan Torah. For 2,447 and a half years, there was no Kedusha associated with grass. But that changed. By Matan Torah, we are given the Parsha of Kriya Shema. And the Parsha of Kriya Shema says, Benasati Esev Besotcha Livhem Techa. I will give the grasses of your field, Livhem Techa, to your animals. The animals would eat those grasses. Then Bnei Yisrael would shecht the animals and make the brachos on the animals. And that would be their tikkun, even for the herbs and the grasses that they ate when your mila, the cow, your mila, everything the cow ate as well. And therefore, we're able to be mitaken grass. That couldn't happen before that. Before Noah, nobody was able to eat meat in the first place. Nobody ate meat. That's until 1656. And even after Noah, there was no Jew to require the mitzvah of Shechita. Avraham Avinu was the first to come up with the concept of Shechita. He did it and passed it along for Klal Yisrael. Shechita Levi always did Shechita from then on. They were able to be Mila, those things out there. Just know that only great tzaddikim that know Kabbalah have the ability to raise tikkunim from two levels down, like plants to our level. Meaning like this, there are really four levels of creation. There's domain, which is something that doesn't have any ability to do anything, like a rock. Then there's someach. Someach are plants and things like that that grow. Then there's chai, which are animals. And then there's medaber, which is a human being. The way to raise a someach to a medaber is very hard for normal people to do. A chai to a medaber, that people can do. But to raise even the food that's in the stomach of the animal to the level of a medaber, to a level of a human being going two levels up, that's very, very hard for a person to do. And very rare to find a person who has the ability to do it. Rav Chista said in Shabbos, Kuf Mem Umadez, when I was poor, I didn't eat vegetables, nor when I was rich. Only when I filled myself up, that's when I ate vegetables. Now, Rav Chista is not telling us his eating habits. Nobody really cares when they eat vegetables and what does it mean. So his meaning is like this. When I was poor, in Am Haaretz, who didn't know any Torah whatsoever, I couldn't eat vegetables because vegetables were too holy for me. I couldn't bring them up to the right level. I didn't know what to do. When I was rich, I also couldn't eat vegetables. Why? because I might have learned Torah, but I wasn't able to raise those things to the higher level beyond from a cow taking the food inside the cow. So even when I was rich, I didn't have to. Until I filled myself up with Kabbalah, with Sodos HaTorah, that's when I was able to bring it to the level above that. Yet another reason why one should not eat salad. We're just not ready for it. I have yet another reason. I'm trying to build as many reasons as possible why I don't have to eat any salad or any lettuce or anything green. That ends up working out until I've grown. This is also done by Yosef HaTzadik in Mitzrayim. The Chassam Sofer brings down that he took the money directly from the other nations' hands. And the reason why is because he wanted to look at those other nations, the people there, and grab the Kedusha and place it within the coin. It was a type of tikkun that he did within all the nations of the world, grabbing their Kedusha and put it in Mitzrayim, so that when Bnei Yisrael eventually left Mitzrayim, they took the money from the Egyptians, taking all the Kedusha with them when they left Mitzrayim. That's what it means in Brachos, Testament Beis, when it says they made the land into a Metzula She'en Bo Dagim, into a net that has no fish in it. They grabbed every bit of Kedusha that there was in Mitzrayim. They took everything out of Mitzrayim to the point where there was nothing left. And therefore Mitzrayim all died. There was nothing there for anything to happen. That's the concept. It's the exact same concept when the Ben Yishai talks about where the Gemara says that a person looked, a great Talmud Chacham looked at someone and turned into a gal shalat thamos, into a pile of bones. How do you make someone into a pile of bones? Well, you take away their kedusha, their life force, and they're nothing but a pile of bones. That's all they are. So too, shakil ba'azel. Whenever it says the word shakil ba'azel, Rav Chisda, along with whoever it is, shakil ba'azel means they were taking from the ground as they were walking. They were grabbing the kedusha wherever they went while they were walking to wherever they would go. That's the concept according to the Ben Yishai. Now, according to Arizal, it's easier for Gerim to raise the sparks of kedusha in food than it is for a tzaddik. My assumption is, although I've never seen the Arizal inside, I've only seen it quoted, is that's because those gerim were on the level of animals. Some of them may even been on the level of plants, meaning they had no purpose, no higher purpose, and the only way to fulfill their purpose was for others to do the tikkun for them. Other tzaddikim had to look at them and take away their kedusha or bring something up because they themselves couldn't do it. Then they made themselves greater, and they did what they were supposed to do, and everything was all good. The great men of Noah realized what Bnei Yisrael was doing. Why were they walking throughout the desert for 40 years? Yes, it was a curse. But what was the tikkun? They were metaking all the sparks of Kedusha throughout the world. They were grabbing the Kedusha that was in the desert. Everything that they could get. And they were upset about this because they realized that that would destroy Moab's identity. Coming close to Moab, Svivo Senu, just coming around us, causes us to be affected. They're just going to look at us. They're not going to fight us. But don't worry about the fighting. They're going to find our Kedusha and get rid of our nation. Would we become like the Arab Rav? A bunch of mindless, as they looked at it, mindless people joining on to Bnei Yisrael, who will never be like Bnei Yisrael themselves, and we're never going to be the same, but we'll be close to them. That they didn't want. They wanted their own identity, they wanted to know who they were, and that was that. Balak was at the forefront of this. Why Balak? I'm not going to go into detail, but he was a son of Yisro. Balak ben Tzippor, in the same way Tzipporah is a daughter of Yisro, Tzippor is a son of Yisro. He's a great grandson of Yisro, is his father. Yisro is a son of Midian. Midian is a son of Avram Avinu. Balak is a great grandson of Avram Avinu. He had Kedusha in him that we cannot imagine whatsoever. He grew up with Moshe Rabbeinu as his brother-in-law. He grew up with him. That's why it says that he was specifically from the land of Midian. But he came to help out Moab to be a king at that time. Rashi also tells us that he was a tremendous magician, even greater than Bilam. But in Shabbat there's a Netziv. Forget about the crazy aspect. Let's go with the Netziv. Yonas ben Uziel says in Netziv, says that there was a deal made by the Moabites that kings would be temporary, and everybody would get a chance to be king. Now, not everybody, but there would be a group of people where each one would be in a round robin to be the king. Supposedly, that's what they have in Lakewood nowadays with the mayor of Lakewood. Meaning the mayor of Lakewood is every couple years somebody else goes in. There's a group of 5-6 people, and they exchange, and each guy goes in. That was the job of the five princes of Midian. when their time came, the king would move to Moab toward that time, and he would rule. But there were princes. There were Nesiche Midian. That's why later on when they fight Moab, there's five Nesiche Midian who fight in the war. Those five Nesiche Midian are the leaders of Moab. They lived in Midian, and every couple years somebody would come in and he would be the king for the time. Tsur was another name for Balak. Balak over here was the king. But later on when they fought Midian, he was the third in command because it wasn't his turn anymore. When they fought Midian, it was time for someone else to become king. Now granted, that was a couple months later. Maybe they switched every month. I have no idea. But that's the idea behind it. That's why they were called Nesichim, not Melachim of Midian. They were princes. And each guy had their chance to be king, but that was that. It could be that this all started when Sihon took over the land. Maybe he wouldn't allow kings to be from Moab. He only allowed kings to come from somewhere else to be in charge of Moab as a punishment to Moab because he didn't like them. Later, when Sihon was disposed of by the Jews, they brought back the Moabite kings. And that's when the Nesiche Midian really were known as the Nesiche Midian now and no longer known as the Malachim of Moab. Maybe that's what it was referring to. Balak saw what the Jews were doing long before it was his turn to become king. He started conversations between the elders of Midian and the Moabites, and that's the beginning of the Parsha. By Yar Balak and Sipor Eskol Shasi Yisrael Amori, by Yodr Moab Bnei Am Ki Rafu, by Yakas Moab Bnei Yisrael, by Yom Moab Bzikni, etc., etc. And at the end of Dalid, Balak and Sipor Melech LeMoab, Bo'isahi, Balak and Sipor had just become king right on that time. When it was his turn to become king, nobody else believed him. He went through with his plans and called in Bilam to try to figure it out. Either way, no matter what, Balak knew that something was wrong here. It's not a coincidence that he knew what the Jews were up to, and then they passed right by his land right at the moment that he becomes king. The truth is, Balak was 100% right. 100% right. The hidden Kedusha of Moab was within him. He was the grandfather of Eglon Melech Moab, who, as we all know, Ehud ben Gera came by and he hid the sword in his right hand side. And when Eglon stood up to hear the word of God, Ehud ben Gera took his sword and stuck it into Eglon. We learn from Eglon that you have to stand up when you hear our Kaddish Baruch Hu's name. Like by, for example, on benching, Baruch Elokeinu Shacham Mishalo, or by Kedusha, when you stand up for Kedusha, why can't you do Kedusha sitting down? We learn it from Eglon Melech Moab. Who is this guy? Well, it's okay now. He's the grandson of Balak, who's the son of Yisro, who's the grandson of Avram Avinu. Now we know where his Kedusha comes from. That Kedusha was there. The Kedusha is there. Eglon was the grandfather of Rus. He's the grandfather of Rus. Rus was going to come from Balak. That's why he's called Ben Tzibor, said the Chassam Sofer. He had a tremendous amount of Kedusha within him. Hidden within him. And Balak knew it. And he knew that if Bnei Yisrael came by, they might grab his Kedusha out, which means that he is gone. The reason for them to exist is gone. And they're destroyed. That's what it means. An ox eats the herbs of the field and is later shechted, causing a tikkun to happen, not only for the ox, but also for the grasses and the herbs that's within him. He was afraid that the Kedusha would be taken away from them and they'd be left with nothing. It would destroy their nation, turn them into Gerim, and that was the last thing they wanted. Chassam Sofer says it a little bit more potent than the Kedusha's lady. Esav is known as an Ish Ha Soda, a man of the field. An ox. If you see an ox in a dream, it refers to a Talmud Chacham. Okay, here we go. Ready? Kedusha can be described as sprouting plants coming from the ground. Kedusha is growing up to Shemayim, coming from the ground, which is Tameh. That's how you can describe Kedusha. But the ground is still Tameh. If the ground grabbed onto the plants and gives it nutrients, that means the Kedusha is affected by the tumor. What's the only way to get rid of that? Bnei Yisrael, the oxen, the Talmidei Chachamim, were going to lick up all the grasses of the field. And when an ox licks something up, it takes out everything, even the roots, so that it no longer has any connection to tumor. Which means they take all the Kedusha out and turn it into something great, while the ground, which is the tumor, is left with nothing. No life. they remain with absolutely nothing. And that's what Moab was afraid of. Moab was afraid that the Nazis were going to come to their nation, take out their Kedusha, and leave them with absolutely nothing but an empty field. Either way, they were wrong. Because the Nazis didn't have the power yet to be attacking the powers of Moab. They couldn't take away the Kedusha of Moab yet. Their Kedusha was very great. The power of Rus and the coming of Mashiach, that's pretty good. That's good. And it wasn't time for David HaMelech to rule over the Bnei Yisrael yet. It wasn't their time to be destroyed yet. Only the land of Sihon and Og that was taken over by them, that was grabbed by Bnei Yisrael. That was made Kadosh. But the land of Moab and Ammon, it wasn't time to take away that land yet. That's why Bilam said to them at the very end of the Parsha, woe to you, Moab. You lost out, you people of Kamosh. You think it's a good thing, but the truth is, you lost out on Kedusha because you're not ready for it. It would have been so much better for you to become Kadosh and to have been part of an Esau, says Bilam. But you didn't want it, so you lost out on it. But they will be fixed later by Boaz and by the times of Mashiach. Once Boaz takes the Kedusha from Rus, Moab is never heard from again. That's the concept of what happened in Moab. Pretty great departure, right? At the beginning of the Happy Shabbos.